Well, you're still here. Good. So I want to continue where I left off yesterday with the admonitions of Gweishan. So here's the next section. He says, if you have never taken the principles of the teachings to heart, you have no basis for awakening to the hidden path. As you advance in years and grow old, your vanity will not allow you to associate with worthy companions. You will only know arrogance and complacency. Dawdling in the human world eventually produces dullness and coarseness. Unawares, you become weak and senile, and encountering events, you face a wall. And when younger people ask you questions, you have nothing to say that will guide them. And even if you do have something to say, it has nothing to do with the teachings. Yet, when you are treated without respect, you immediately denounce the impoliteness of the younger generation. And angry thoughts flare up, and your words afflict everyone. So, this is a rather dismaying character sketch of the person who goes through life without practice. And by my observation, it seems unfortunately true. I mean, if you have a lifelong habit of defending yourself and your point of view, of denigrating others who disagree with your point of view, of always upholding yourself and defending yourself, even though in your heart of hearts, which you try your best to avoid, you know that you're not really all that smart and wise and well-informed. But if you behave like that for a long time, you do become brittle. And it does become more difficult, actually, to love people, to have faith in people, to be generous and forgiving. And I, like I say, unfortunately, I've seen this happen in lots of older people. They used to say, old people are set in their ways. Set, you know, like concrete gets set. And this becomes eventually quite a painful way to live. And old age can become very sad and bitter. The passage where he refers to younger people asking you questions is very interesting to me. I don't know when it happened, but it's maybe a couple hundred years where it used to be, you know, elders were venerated as, you know, wise people who lived a long time, and therefore they must know something. But that was thrown out the window a few hundred years ago or so. In the modern era, in the past, the established ways must be overthrown. This is progress. Yesterday is gone. Forget about it. Doesn't matter. Today is much better. Now they call it disruption in Silicon Valley. It's a really good thing. Disrupt. Forget about yesterday and all these people who used to do it that way. We have a disruptive way of doing it. And we think it's good, you know. Stock price goes up. Good. But also not great. because if you should be fortunate enough not to die young, well, you're going to grow old, right? Everybody is. And then if you're fortunate enough to still be alive, you're going to even grow older than that. And then, as time goes by, you're going to feel like, well, I'm not so cutting edge anymore. I'm not so disruptive as I used to be. So you will be in a desperate effort to remain relevant, useful, active, important, which will increasingly be pathetic. But this is actually the way that we live now. This is the theory. This is the idea. That's what we are all trying to do. So imagine a different way. Imagine that your whole life through, you had the idea that it might happen, you might grow old. And you knew that. You took that into account from the beginning. Now, I'm not talking about, like, saving for your retirement or buying a cemetery plot. That's not what I mean. I mean, making the effort from the beginning to try to develop your inner life so that you're preparing yourself for that eventuality. Imagine if you had the thought, well, when I grow old, I would like to have developed some wisdom, some serious kindness, some appreciation of what life is really about, so that I will have something to offer younger people who could benefit from all the years that I have lived. Because the truth of the matter is that younger people, who are certainly admirable for their energy, their intelligence, their vision, and their idealism, are always in need of some perspective, some wisdom. And really and truly, it is a very sad society in which old people just don't have the wisdom and the perspective to offer. Because they actually are grumpy, old, irrelevant fools. So why listen to them? You know? And it's not that you listen to everybody. What if they really are idiots? You know, forget about them. So let's develop ourselves so that we won't be that person, and that we will have a society in which there is a little bit of wisdom in age. So this is what Guishan is telling us. You better practice now and keep on with it so that you will have something to offer to younger people as you age, and so that the world will be a better and wiser world. So that's old age, but then what next? Guishan then says this. One day you will lie in sickness, flat on your back, with myriad pains oppressing you, thinking and pondering from morning till night. Your heart will be full of fear and dread. The road ahead is vague, boundless, and you don't know where you're going to go. Here you will finally know to repent of your errors. But what's the use of trying to dig a well when you're already dying of thirst? You will regret not having prepared earlier, now that it is late and your faults are so many. And when the end is nigh, you will shake apart terrified and trembling. The cage broken, the sparrow flies. And consciousness will follow what you have done, like a person burdened with debts, dragged away first by the strongest. The threads of mind, frayed and diffused, tend to fall to whatever is most pressing. The murderous demon of impermanence does not stop moment to moment. Life cannot be extended. Time is unreliable. No one in any realm of being can escape this. Subjection to physical existence has gone on this way forever. So this is a little, wow, Guishan, do you really have to go there? But this admonition to worry now about how horrifying it's going to be when you're on your deathbed and you're terrified and unable to face what you have to face because you're not at all prepared for it, actually is true. I don't think most people who take up Zen practice take it up with the motivation to be preparing themselves for their death, although some people who begin practice in old age actually do. But most people don't have that motivation. But the fact of the matter is that all religious practice actually is meant to be preparation for death. Because if there were no death, there would be no religious practice. You don't see animals doing religion, right? Because animals don't die. What? Animals don't die? No, they don't die. They live and then they don't live. But they don't die. Death is a human concept. It's a human feeling. It's a human dread. It's something shared by all human beings, each one of us in a different way. Thank goodness we have the tremendous capacity for denial and forgetting, otherwise we'd all be going crazy every day. But it's because of death that every single human community ever known always has a form of religion or spirituality, because human beings have to cope with this. Of course, nobody knows what it's going to be like when death comes. And there are people who, fortunately or unfortunately, die all of a sudden. Maybe they're shot dead, or maybe they die instantly in an accident or from a sudden stroke or a heart attack. They die in an instant. But who knows, actually, how long that instant is? How many eons pass by in what seems to the outward eye like a second or two? Most people die more slowly. Are we ready? Will there be untold and seemingly eternal terrors at that time? The residue of all our unwise thoughts, words, and deeds. All the religions of the world have various versions of hells and heavens. Maybe those are meant to be descriptions of what we actually experience in the last few moments of an uncultivated life. Of course, there's no guarantee that a lifetime of religious practice will help us at all at that time, because we don't know the measure of our ancient twisted karma. But if we believe Guishan and many other sages who say this, then yes, it is probably a really good idea for us to prepare for that very important moment with a whole lifetime of practice. To begin right now, to clean up our messes, so that when the time comes, we will have a clear space to turn around in. I've always been impressed that tombstones have the deceased person's name and two numbers, the date of death and the date of birth, which are the two most important events in a person's life. The date of birth doesn't depend on you. Others have created that moment of your life. But the date of death entirely depends on you. That is a number and a date that will be fulfilled through all you have felt and thought and said and done in this short human lifetime. Maybe it does make some sense that you would spend your life preparing for this most important and most decisive event. Guishan. Our regret is that we are born in an era of imitation. The age of saints is distant, and Buddhism is decadent, and almost everybody's lazy. If you pass your whole life asleep, what is there to rely on? If you only want to sit still with folded hands and do not value every moment of time, if you do not work diligently at your tasks, then you have no basis for accomplishment. How can you pass a whole life in vain? So again, Guishan is saying this 1,000 years ago, but we could say this today. We're not living necessarily in such inspiring times. When I was young and just starting to practice Dharma, there were many, many sages and great masters still alive. They were old. And in the world, there were many moral heroes. But now all those great teachers are gone. And as far as our leaders are concerned, we're seeing the rise of a generation of political and social leaders who are not necessarily good or worthy examples, but instead represent raw and naked power, wielded seemingly for its own sake. Leaders who seem to be able to gain quite a bit of support through fear and loathing more than respect and awe. But this should give us more rather than less incentive to practice. This is what Guishan implies, that it really is now up to us, to each one of us. We can't rely on others to follow, others who are going to bring us along. It's up to us, and we better begin right now, and having begun, continue our whole life through. Practice is not a course we take, and then once we pass the course and receive our teacher certification slip or certificate. We can go on to the next course and become a teacher of something else. Practice, as Guishan understands it, is continuous and unceasing. We continue on and on throughout this life and times to come, as we say in our ceremonies. Guishan says next, when you speak, let it concern the scriptures. In discussion, follow your study of the ancients. Be upright and noble of demeanor, with lofty and serene spirit. So yes, good idea to study the Dharma, study the sutras, study the sayings of the ancients. Although, as we know, Zen practice does not emphasize the accumulation of knowledge, it does encourage us to understand our life with some accuracy, and to know how not to get tripped up in our own erroneous ideas. It's really worthwhile to study the Dharma because Buddhist thought is a really powerful and corrective perception, perspective. It's a way of understanding life that is not doctrinaire and not absolute. But you could also get tangled up in Buddhist ideas too. And you could become doctrinaire and absolute about those ideas. So whatever you study, be sure that you train yourself also in letting go of your study, not being caught by it. One of the most unusual and famous things about the Buddha is that he did not propose tell us the truth. He instead wanted to help us undo the truth that we are so certain we know. He wanted us to be free of the truth and to be able to simply live in the open. And yes, these wonderful words of Guishan, words we so seldom hear these days, should seep into our hearts. Upright, noble, lofty, serene. Of course, we can't impose these things on ourselves or pretend or force. But we can do our best to take ourselves seriously as Buddhist practitioners, to take our places as noble members of the Buddhist family. Certainly, this does not mean being arrogant as if we are somehow special. But it does mean to live with a sense of respect. Respect for oneself, respect for all people and all things. And as the tradition says, respect for our elders in the Dharma and for the Buddhas and ancestors of the past, whom we understand in our tradition as depending on us in exactly the same way that we depend on them. Guishan. On a long journey, it is essential to go with good companions. Purify your eyes and ears again and again. When you stay somewhere, choose your company and listen to what you have not heard time and again. This is the basis of saying, it was my parents who bore me. It was my companions who raised me. I guess an old Chinese saying. And this passage is, of course, about the importance for our practice of sangha relations. Because, of course, we're going to be influenced by those around us. So let's pay attention to who is around us. If we hang around with fools, we will become foolish. The intention of all Buddhist sanghas is to cultivate wisdom and compassion. And even though every single Buddhist sangha is made of ordinary human beings, who are therefore, by virtue of that, far from being perfect, and we should never be surprised when we discover this, still, because of this intention to cultivate wisdom and compassion that is built into the practice and repeated in every single practice session we ever do, we can trust our sangha friends to be a good influence on us. And of course, each one of us as a sangha member has the obligation to influence others for the good. And you can't do that by persuasion or manipulation. The only way you can do that is by your conduct of body, speech, and mind. Guishan says a little more about this all-important point. Companionship with the good is like walking through the dew and mist. Although they do not drench your clothing, in time it becomes imbued with moisture. Familiarity with evil increases false knowledge and views, creating evil day and night. Maybe you notice this metaphor, the right way of walking in the mist, not knowing you're getting drenched, but then you go inside and you're all wet. It's one of Suzuki Roshi's most famous sayings. I think it's in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Now you know that he got that from Guishan. He didn't make that up. He thought, oh, the Suzuki Roshi is so smart. He thinks that that's very useful. No, he got that from Guishan. And I would be a bit surprised to find that Guishan got that from somebody else in the past, maybe even from the Buddha. I'm often like startled when I read early Buddhist sutras to find in the metaphors and teachings that I thought were original to Zen. But no, they're there in the beginning. Anyway, regardless of where this metaphor comes from, it's a nice metaphor, and it's telling us, hang around with good people and wise people. It might not seem like anything spectacular. Maybe you won't have quite as much fun as you might have had hanging around and that's the exciting, flamboyant, crazy people. But, you know, that gets old fairly fast anyway. And if you hang around with good people, little by little, you will be drenched in the Dharma. Question. You experience consequences right away, and after death, you sink. Once you have lost human life, you will not return ever again, even in 10,000 eons. True words may offend the ear, but do they not impress the heart? If you cleanse the mind and cultivate virtue, conceal your tracks and hide your name, preserve the fundamental and purify the spirit, then the clamor will cease. So this line is important. Cleanse the mind, cultivate virtue, conceal your tracks. Meaning, don't worry about getting credit. just do what's right for its own sake. This is a really big point in Dharma that's not unique to Gweishan. You hear it over and over again from the beginning. And it's the opposite of what you hear now. Build your brand. You need to do that. You know, if you do something, half of it is the thing doing the thing. The other half is letting everybody know that you did it, because what good is doing it if nobody knows you did it? That's just good culture in the business world, you know. You're dumb if you do stuff and nobody knows you did it. Spend 6-7 minutes writing a poem and a week publicizing it. Putting it on Facebook and getting people to notice it, asking your friends to review it, so on. Build your brand. Don't be an idiot. Even Dharma teachers these days need to build their brands, right? But it is actually very explicit in the teachings that this is a very bad idea. Not only will it not help, it will be a big hindrance. Preserve the fundamental. Purify the spirit. Don't forget the main point. Don't forget that you're here for a reason. There's something you're here to do. Don't lose track of that. Don't distract yourself. And when you keep moving forward in doing what it is that you were born to do, all the noise quiets down and you'll finally be able to think straight. Gweishan. If you want to study the way by intensive meditation and make a sudden leap beyond expedient teachings, let your mind merge with the hidden harbor. Investigate its subtleties, determine its most profound depths, and realize its true source. So now, after all of these admonitions and discussions of conduct and morality, he's talking now about zazen. Let your mind merge with the hidden harbor. Just drift into that hidden harbor. Let go of everything that blows you this way and that way. Just drift into that hidden harbor. And when you're there, plumb its depths and merge with it thoroughly. And go beyond the usual understanding of what it means to live and how to live. And find out how we really must live. When you suddenly awaken to the true basis, this is the stairway leading out of materialism. This shatters the 25 domains of being in the three realms of existence. Know that everything, inside and out, is all unreal, arising from transformations of mind. All things are merely provisional names. Don't set your mind on them. As long as feelings do not stick to things, how can things hinder people? Leaving them to the all-pervasive flow of reality. Do not cut them off, yet do not continue them either. When you hear sound and see form, all is normal, whether in the relative world or in the transcendental absolute, appropriate function is never lacking. One of the beautiful things I think of our practice tradition and the way it thinks about the world is that it doesn't see a difference between materialism and non-materialism. To be what we would call materialistic is to misunderstand materialism, because there's nothing there to be possessive about. Everything is unreal in the sense that nothing is real in the way we take it to be real. I think you've studied recently some text of mind-only school, which teaches that everything, the whole world, is nothing but transformations of mind. Understanding here by mind, it doesn't mean the brain. It means things as they truly are, beyond our projections and wishes. There is nothing to hold on to. There's nothing to get stuck on. Nothing impedes the flow of reality. Have you noticed that? Reality flows on no matter what we do. We can go all we want to screw it up, and yet the world is still here. Everything comes and goes freely in beauty. When you know that, you know how to respond to things, how to be with things serenely. If there are people of middling ability who are as yet unable to transcend all at once, let them concentrate upon the teaching, closely investigating the scriptures and scrupulously looking into the inner meaning. Having not heard it said, the vine that clings to the pine climbs to the heights. Only based on the most excellent foundation may there be widespread wheel. Carefully cultivate frugality and self-control. Don't vainly be remiss, and do not go too far. Then in all worlds and every life, there will be sublime cause and effect. So nuts and bolts advice. Study the teachings, respect the Dharma, be modest, be careful. And actually, things will work out fine. You don't have to worry. I mean, try to control the myriad causes and conditions that make up your life. Good luck. We'll just go bananas. There's no way. But cut a straight path through life. Clear, kind, honest, you'll be fine. Everything will go perfectly. Whoops, didn't go perfectly. Okay, I know what to do. I know how to turn that into the Dharma. Very bad and perfect. Guishan continues, cease conceptualization. Forget about objects. Don't be a partner to the dusts. When the mind is empty, objects are quiet. Assert mastery. Do not follow human sentimentality. The entanglements of the results of actions are impossible to avoid. When the voice is gentle, the echo is gentle. When the figure is upright, the shadow is straight. Cause and effect are perfectly clear. Have you no concern? And he's continuing the same thought. Be present and upright with things. Don't get caught in fame or gain or progress or transcendence. Just be here, quietly, patiently facing each thing as it comes. We're all human beings, so our organism is made to feel grief, fear, love, hate, and so on. I don't know if ants, spiders feel those things in the same way. Probably not. We feel these things. Just don't get swept up by them. Just don't get caught by them. If you really want to appreciate your grief, your love, your sorrow, your anguish, let it be there. Breathe with it. Let it go. The virtue of every human emotion is that it connects us to others. So we can welcome every emotion, the good and the bad. Be upright and gentle, and you'll always be okay. That's the end of the Guishan's admonitions. It ends actually with a poem. I'll read you this poem. This is Guishan's concluding poem. This illusory body, this house of dreams, appearances in emptiness, there has never been a beginning. How could there be an end? Appearing here, disappearing there, rising, sinking, worn out and exhausted, and never able to escape the cycle. When will there ever be rest? Lusting for the world, body, mind, and the causal nexus compound the substance of life. From birth to old age, nothing is gained. Subjection to delusion comes from fundamental ignorance. Take heed, time is passing. We can't count on a moment. If you go through this life in vain, the coming world will be obstructed. Going from illusion to illusion is all due to indulgent senses. They come and go through mundane routines, crawling through the triple world. So you better call on enlightened teachers without delay and approach those of lofty virtue. Analyze and understand body and mind. Clear away the brambles. The world is inherently evanescent, empty. How can conditions ever oppress you? Plumb the essence of truth with awakening as your guide. Let go of mind. Let go of objects. Don't recall. Don't recollect. With the senses free of care, activity and rest are both peaceful and quiet. With the unified mind, unaroused, myriad things all rest. So that's, I actually went through the whole text, that's all of it. I didn't skip any. That's all. Admonitions of Guishan. Thank you for listening. The other day, I was online with some kind of course that I was giving, and there was question and answer, and somebody said, "How can I overcome this constant expectation that I have that something that has not yet happened in my practice will happen?" I have this expectation, and it's driving me nuts. And I've been practicing for years, and all the time that I've been practicing, I've been expecting this thing to happen, and it never has happened. And by now, I'm getting really, really frustrated about this. And I know that this expectation is standing in my way. How can I get rid of it? And he went on to explain. He said, "Now, don't get me wrong. I have been practicing for a long time, and I'm continuing to practice because my practice has really changed my life. I am definitely a calmer person, much happier than I used to be. I get into far less trouble than I got into before. I have a lot of joy and gratitude. I've never felt those things before, and my relationships are much better. So I'm not giving up, because I know this is really good. But I have this expectation and this tremendous disappointment, because I have not, you know, received what I've been expecting. So what do I do about this? He asked me. I was so amazed by this that he said, "Isn't this funny? This crazy problem of being human."